I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased you can join us for this four-part series with Dr. Nick O'Connor and Dr. Catherine Turner. This podcast is part one of a four-part series on restorative just culture. In this segment, Journey to Restorative Just Culture, Nick will explore with Catherine what restorative just culture is and why it's important in healthcare. This includes a historic overview of restorative just culture and its origins from Indigenous culture, and also how it's evolved as a social movement across different settings. They look at the criminal justice, the education sectors, and then moving on to the relevance to the healthcare settings. Catherine describes what restorative just and learning culture looks like in a district service as we move away from a culture of blame and a very linear model of managing incidents. Catherine and Nick both share their personal journey with restorative just culture and how it's been really instrumental in supporting a genuine culture of change from that of blaming and shaming when things do go wrong to a culture of healing and restoration, which further enables learning, improvement, and, you know, what they both describe as a true level of accountability. I hope you enjoy this introduction.
Catherine, I thought we probably should start on just describing or defining what restorative just culture is in the healthcare setting. And I rather like Howard Zeer's definition from his little book of restorative justice. And I've changed the wording slightly because he talks about a specific offence because it's in the context of the correctional system. But he says restorative justice is a process to involve, to the extent possible, those who have a stake in a serious adverse incident and collectively identify and address harms, needs, and obligations in order to heal and put things as right as possible. What do you, is that for you, is that your the way you sort of understand restorative just culture? Is there anything you'd add?
I think it captures it very well. You know, I think that that brings it back to the core principles of it. I think it's a great book, that little book of restorative justice. I read it quite early on and it really helped to me to conceptualise what restorative just culture was all about.
It's quite a short book, isn't it? I downloaded it, an electronic copy, which allows me to take notes. And I think I read it in about an hour. Possibly a little bit longer than that. There's quite a history to restorative justice. Could you tell us a bit about that history?
Yes, well, it's sort of not a new concept, really, and sort of certainly has been described in Indigenous cultures, such as Maori people and other sort of First Nations people. And then sort of, I guess, in more recent times, it's appeared in the literature, you know, over the past 100 to 200 years, sort of sporadically, but really it was Howard Zeer's articulation of it in about 2002, I think, that put it out there, you know, clearly with a, you know, clear definition and what it was. So that concept of restorative just culture sort of is now a more consistently used term, I think. And he talked about it within the criminal context, but it's then sort of fairly rapidly spread to a range of sort of settings. Schools is one area that's particularly prominently using it. And then, you know, in more recent times, really, it's gelled very well with some of the changes that we needed to do in the healthcare setting in the way that we respond to incidents. It's also, some people call it sort of a social movement, that it's sort of spread across the globe. And I think it's also useful in a healthcare setting. Some people are using it for HR processes, and I think that's a really interesting sort of use of restorative processes, and I think something that would be great to explore further. But also in the health setting, it's been used in sort of forensic health settings. So where people have sort of harmed someone else when they were mentally ill, and looking for an approach that can bring the person that was harmed together with the person that harmed did the harm, and in a restorative process. And certainly sort of in our organisation, Metro North, there is some work going on about restorative practices in that sort of context, sort of both sort of more general in looking at how we respond to conflict on a ward, but then looking at those actual restorative meetings between people, you know, with mental illness who may have harmed where they were unwell and the victims.
Yeah, look, it's so interesting, isn't it? And, you know, the Maori understanding and use of restorative justice, I think, is something that's very salutary for us. And I know there is a chair, the Diana Unwin Chair of Restorative Justice at Wellington, at Victoria University Wellington. You mentioned, or we mentioned, Howard Zeer's book in 2002. And, of course, one of your key references is Virginia Sharp's work in 2004, where I think she really brings this into the healthcare setting. And that for me is the earliest sort of mention of a sort of forward-looking accountability in relation to restorative justice, something we'll get onto in subsequent discussions here. And then, of course, there was Sydney Decker's publication of Restorative Just Culture, well, I think around 2016-17, building very much on the work of Zeer and Sharp. I think one of the things that's the literature tells me is that there are a number of different pathways that people that have been thinking and working in this area have come to the sort of same place. And I just wanted to explore with you what your journey was and just briefly discuss my own. I remember my first real thoughts about this was when I was an area director and I was the subject of some really concerted attempts over about 10 years by a family in terms of litigation about the death by suicide of their daughter, which was a very tragic event. And that profoundly affected me and the clinicians involved. I was in a leadership position and made me really think about blame and accountability and different types of accountability. And then, of course, I've been troubled for quite a while about root cause analysis and this sort of linear causality that gets applied to very complex situations. What's been your pathway to this?
So I guess the steps that led me to Restorative Just Culture was when we were when we made the decision to implement Zero Suicide on the Gold Coast. And we thought that it had great merit in terms of an approach to change management. And, you know, that aspirational goal was incredibly important in terms of shifting mindsets and energising the service. But we knew that there was a risk to it. The risk could it worsen a blame culture by using the zero word and the sense that if someone did die by suicide, someone must be to blame. And there was already a sense of a, you know, blame culture that clinicians were certainly concerned about. So we made a decision to focus just as much on just culture as we would on the zero suicide. And so that led me to look at, just culture and what's just culture and how can we implement that within a service. I looked at, various things, prominently sort of published information about that. But I must admit, I did struggle to understand how that actually, the use of algorithms and things to work out, whether someone's to blame for something or not. I couldn't see how it could actually change our culture. And then, so We had a roundtable discussion where we were very fortunate to have Professor Sydney Decker come along and have a chat. And I presented some of this information about my understanding of just culture, and he really challenged it very significantly. At the end of the meeting, I was really thinking, well, what on earth do I do? You know, because he really had very strong challenges to the traditional concept of just culture. And then he sent me a copy of one of his chapters in his book, and then it just absolutely made sense to me. It was very clear, a restorative just culture, how it could actually change the culture in the organisation on all of the steps that we could make or we could take to change the culture. And then I read the little book of restorative justice, and that sort of filled in a lot of the gaps for me and really hardwired the fundamental principles of it that have really been consistent through our work. So that got us doing a whole lot of actions within the service based on restorative just culture.
Yeah. I mean, I think, and those in the audience who aren't in mental health, you know, zero harm is the same sort of challenge as zero suicide for mental health services. And in the context of, a health system at the moment, which is, I think, somewhat disposed to blaming or shaming when KPIs or, you know, performance goals are not met, you do need to change the culture in order for people not to be too gun-shy or worried about aspiring to zero harm in the system. I wonder if, just to finish off this segment, whether you could describe for us what a restorative, just and learning culture looks like in a district service. How would you sort of, as an overview, and I think in subsequent sessions we'll get into some of the details, but what's different about it?
So I think it's, you know, an organisation that is deeply committed to learning, that has that as a central part, and understands that we need to set the scene and support staff so that they feel safe to be able to learn. And I think it's a commitment to, thinking about those who've been harmed, the family centrally, but also the clinicians. And I think it's a more mindful response to incidents in the way that we think through the principles of restorative just culture and then respond in that way. I guess that's just a broad overview.
Yep, fantastic.
Thank you for listening to this podcast series with Dr. Nick O'Connor and Dr. Catherine Turner on restorative just culture. I hope you've enjoyed it. Please note this is one of a four-part series, and I hope you listen to the other three segments as Nick and Catherine continue to take us on a journey exploring their experiences and their insight into restorative just culture. This four-part series includes conversations around practical implementation of restorative just culture and what it looks like in healthcare. Catherine will share her experiences on implementing the restorative just culture framework in mental health services and the impact that this has had on the management of incidents. And she'll give some really practical examples around this. I hope you enjoy the remainder of this series. I'm Debbie Draby from the Clinical Excellence Commission, and I'm pleased you can join us in this conversation with senior leaders on the guiding principles of effective morbidity and mortality meetings in action. This podcast series aims to explore the experiences and insights from leading M&M meetings. Look out for more podcasts as we continue this conversation and clinicians share their journey and learning. I hope you find it useful, and if you'd like to contribute to this conversation, please contact me.